Hello, and welcome to Iris, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, June 20th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Taking a look at today's weather forecast, plan on a hot couple of days ahead of us with plenty of sunshine as well. Look for highs into the 90s this afternoon with a breezy southwest wind. Lows tonight will probably stay up in the 70s over much of the area, which will give us a head start in another hot one tomorrow. Highs tomorrow afternoon look to reach well into the 90s. A weak front arrives from the northwest later in the afternoon and may generate some isolated storms, especially given how hot and humid it will be. This front will bring slightly cooler temperatures for Wednesday and Thursday. Another system remains possible around Friday or Saturday, and we'll have to watch for the potential of strong to severe weather during that time as well. Now on the front page of the Courier today, we have these stories: Iowa law attempts to tackle drug costs, and for kids of all ages. Also, Cedar Basin Music Festival thinks big, and we begin reading a Whitewater success story. This comes to us from Ali Hinga of the Telegraph Herald. Manchester Park has transformed riverfront. Dateline Manchester. Over the past several years, Jeff Phillips has seen a stretch of river that flows through downtown Manchester change dramatically. The Manchester residents started fishing in the Maquoketa River before city leaders transformed a more than 800-foot stretch of water into a community attraction that draws swimmers, tubers, kayakers, and anglers from across the region and even the country. Manchester Whitewater Park features 6 18-inch drops that create a whitewater effect, making it a popular spot on warm summer weekends. Quote, in the summertime, this whole thing will be packed with people swimming, fishing, kayaking, and tubing, Phillips told the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. He considers the Whitewater Park a significant improvement over what was there previously. And the fishing is better now, too. Quote, it's definitely got more people out on the river, Phillips said. There wasn't really much here before. Cedar Falls. The city of Cedar Falls anticipates putting a similar multi-million-dollar project out to bid in late summer or early fall. Once completed, officials hope it too will attract people to an underutilized part of the Cedar River near downtown and potentially create several dozen new outdoor travel and tourism jobs. Multiple kayak play areas, fishing jetties, habitat spawning pools, and river access points along the riverbank improvements would be added between the Main Street Bridge and West First Street Bridge. At the same time, local leaders have a greater vision for a number of projects that would connect the two largest Blackhawk County cities along the Cedar River. It has been more than a decade since community leaders first started floating ideas for the Whitewater Park, and 7 years since it opened to the public. The project turned what once was an underutilized area of town into a popular amenity with wide-ranging impacts on the city. The Whitewater Park, billed as the largest in Iowa and the Midwest, has been a force to bring people into the community, helping put Manchester on the map and providing a boost to local businesses. Quote, it's changed us in the sense that we have what I would consider a major attraction now, said City Manager Tim Vick. A variety of visitors took in the Whitewater Park on a recent weekend afternoon. One family gathered around picnic tables at the shelter by the river, while several more passed by on the sidewalk wearing their swimsuits and carrying inner tubes to the start of the stretch of whitewater features. Meanwhile, other visitors relaxed on swinging benches along the sidewalk or played on a musical instrument installation. Farther down the river, more people gathered on the rocks along the bank, seemingly to watch as tubers tried to stay afloat as they navigated the drops. Quote, we've always wanted to do this for the last couple of years, and this is the first time the weather's been right to give it a try, said Nick Glue of Marion. who visited the Whitewater Park with his family and his sister-in-law's family. Glue grew up in Manchester and came back with his family to camp for the weekend, stopping by the Whitewater Park on a Sunday afternoon. The two dads in the group floated the entire length of the Whitewater Park, while the kids stuck to the last drop because of the high flow in the river. Quote, "I thought it was super fun," said Lee Glue, 13. "Once you go down and you splash in the biggest part, it's the best feeling ever," unquote. The idea for the Whitewater Park was born more than a decade ago as part of the grassroots Good to Greet initiative, which brought community members together to develop city projects. As a committee looked at ways to enhance the community's waterfront, the idea for a Whitewater Park bubbled to the top. At the time, the stretch of the river featured a low head dam, and the area wasn't particularly well used. Quote, "I think a lot of people just wanted to see the area cleaned up and improved," said Ryan Wicks, a civil engineer in Manchester who was a member of the committee. Part of the allure of the idea was that it would be a unique offering for the community. Iowa didn't have any whitewater parks at the time, with Charles City opening the first one in 2011, and Elkader opening another one in 2014. Members of the Good to Greet group brought a proposal to the city council members, who agreed to fund a portion of the project if the group could secure the rest of the money with fundraising and grants. A campaign group went door to door to solicit private donations and ended up raising about $500,000. Quote, "The interest varied wildly," Vic said. "We had some people that were a little concerned that they were going to lose their fishing habitat right in front of the dam. We had a number of people who were excited about the opportunities this presented," unquote. Work on the project kicked off in 2014, and the Whitewater Park opened in 2015. The initial project would end up costing about $2.2 million, paid for with private donations, $745,000 in grants, and close to $1 million in general obligation bonds. While there was a bit of learning curve for visitors at first, the park quickly became a popular spot for tubers who bought out all the inner tubes in local stores. Quote, "It really did turn into a destination for people that were interested in playing on the water," Vic said. A second phase of work totaling close to $1 million added a riverfront park pavilion, parking, and other amenities. The work was funded with close to $200,000 in grants, $50,000 in donations, and about $760,000 from general obligation bonds. The park now boasts a shelter, shower, and restroom facilities, a trail, a spot where visitors can inflate inner tubes, and a musical instrument installation. Next, from Aaron Murphy, the Gazette's Des Moines Bureau, new Iowa law attempts to take on drug prices. Dateline Des Moines. Lowering prescription drug prices and protecting rural pharmacies are the main goals of a new state law that adds regulations of companies that serve as a sort of middleman between pharmacies and insurance companies. The new provisions were unanimously approved by state lawmakers this session and signed into law last week by Governor Kim Reynolds. Pharmacy benefits managers, or PBMs, are third-party companies that administer drug plans on behalf of health insurance providers. The industry says that saves consumers money by negotiating with drug makers, but critics say consolidation in the BPM industry has actually led to higher prescription drug prices and threatened the existence of rural pharmacies. The new state law requires BPMs to update weekly their list of reimbursement rates to pharmacies, allows pharmacies to disclose or sell lower-cost prescriptions to covered individuals, and creates a framework for the state insurance commissioner to gather data on BPM's activity in the state. Quote, "Drug prices are out of control, and Iowans feel it every day. The BPM industry has a large part to do with the increased prices," said Representative Brian Best, a Republican from Glidden, who managed the legislative proposal in the Iowa House. Quote, their practices also continue to put independent pharmacies out of business, harming Iowans' access to care. Quote, with nearly 9 in 10 Americans living within 5 miles of a community pharmacy, the local pharmacist is oftentimes the health professional Iowans see most often, especially in rural Iowa. In addition, with the primary care provider shortage looming, we need to ensure Iowans continue to have access. If we don't reform PBMs, pharmacies will continue to go out of business, unquote. Iowa lawmakers have been working on BPM-related legislation for 15 years, but a 2020 U.S. Supreme Court ruling cleared the way for states to regulate BPMs. Dozens of states have enacted new regulations since that ruling. Representative John Forbes, a Democrat from Urbandale and pharmacist, said dozens of community pharmacies in Iowa have closed over the past decade. He said that is creating pockets of the state where it is difficult for residents to access medication. Forbes said low reimbursement rates for prescription drugs is one of the main causes, and that new state law is an attempt to create a more level playing field between pharmacies and BPMs. Quote, the goal being to make sure pharmacy services were readily available to all areas in the state of Iowa, Forbes said. Best said the consolidation of BPM industry has reduced competition. 3 companies control 80% of the BPM market, according to research from Health Industries Research, a nonpartisan healthcare market research organization. According to the research, CVS Caremark owns 34% of the BPM market, Express Scripts 25%, and Optimum Rx 21%. The next most prominent company is Humana, which has 8% of the market share, according to the research. Quote, their power is such that the typical way you are able to negotiate with a business contract is not possible. It's a system where you, as the employer, accept their terms, or they leave you and instead only include their pharmacy as part of the network, Best said. There is no longer a free market in this space. Reform is needed to restore a competitive marketplace that will benefit the consumer, unquote. CVS Health opposed the new law. In a statement, a company spokesperson warned the new law could produce, quote, higher costs at the pharmacy counter, unquote, and said lawmakers should instead focus their work on drug prices set by drug companies. During the legislative process, the House approved a package that went even further, but it was scaled back in the Senate. Still, House File 2384 was approved unanimously in both chambers, and Reynolds signed it into law on June 13th. Shortly after lawmakers concluded their work for the session in May, Jack Whitfer, the Republican Senate Majority Leader from Ankeny, described how challenging it was to produce the legislation. Quote, the House passed the bill probably 60-plus days ago, Whitfer said at the time. Quote, and in that time, I've had probably at least 60 meetings on that bill. It's a very complicated issue. You have the pharmacist on one hand, you have pharmaceutical companies on the other, you have BPMs, you have insurance companies, you have employers. So to try to find a balance to do what we're trying to do, which is control drug prices, is very difficult. And to try to get all those people on the same page is almost impossible, unquote. Lawmakers said they hope the legislation is just a first step and that they can revisit the issue in future sessions after the state insurance commissioner collects more data. Quote, hopefully what the bill does is, in the short term, is give some ability of the local pharmacies to stay strong by preventing some of the clawbacks and some of the practices that the BPMs are doing, but also allows the insurance commissioner to start collecting data that we need to actually make the right decision and the informed decision down the road, Whitfer said. Next on the front page is a story filed by Andy Malone. Sturgis Falls Celebration, a one-of-a-kind Cedar Falls festival, kicks off Friday. and it begins with a picture of a very young little girl sitting on a horse on a merry-go-round, and you can see her father's hand supporting her back, making sure she stays mounted. Dateline Cedar Falls. The Cedar Falls celebration will mark its 46th year on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And there's one word the event's president, Jay Stoddard, 75, consistently used to describe the event he helped organize for decades and envisions still leading come the event's 50th year. That word is unique. The event, named after William Sturgis, who in 1845 founded the Sturgis Falls community that later became the city of Cedar Falls, now includes everything from a food court, carnival, and pop-up market to parades, live music, beer, crafts, souvenirs, and lots of activities and entertainment across four parks. Then there are other tidbits, he said, that make it memorable, like the one-of-a-kind dispenser that fills a beer cup through a hole at the bottom and perfectly up to the top. Perhaps it's the music of Arch Allies, America's premier tribute band. Or this time, it may be all about Vic Ferrari, a festival favorite ensemble that will perform classic rock and a little country for the last time at Sturgis because of plans to call it quits later this year after a 35-year run. Quote, it's like a 1,000-piece puzzle that we have to put together each year, said Stoddard. But he believes it's unlike any other event because of the logistics and planning that ensure the thousands of attendees have an affordable, stress-free experience. That starts with the fact that a person doesn't have to worry about breaking the bank because admission is free, and it includes an immense amount of parking along Lincoln Street from Cedar Valley Creamery to Dolly's Taxi and Transport. Quote, the advantage of our event over others is we have the parking to handle everyone, Stoddard said. And believe me, it'll all be taken. He and his board have the execution down to a system, with little hiccups to report each year. He said a large reason is because of all the volunteers and the integral partnership with Cedar Falls Utilities. Quote, I was brought up by a family that taught me to give back, said Stoddard. Me and the 15 board members aren't paid to do this, he said. Despite all the success, the long lines for beer tickets was one aspect last year that he said led to a lot of grief. Stoddard is happy to report that because of four new air-conditioned units he'll be incorporating into the setup, there will be 8 lines instead of 3. Another new feature this year will be a VIP trailer available to rent all day with air conditioning and a staircase leading to an upper deck. While not new, Stoddard said one less thing an attendee has to worry about is getting from the parked car to the festival grounds. Volunteers will again be helping transport attendees by golf carts to the carnival grounds and stage at Gateway Park off Lincoln Street. And then the trams, pulled by pickup trucks, will be there to help people get over the Main Street Bridge to the other sector of the festival on Overman Park and the surrounding streets, Franklin, 2nd, 3rd, and Clay. Besides walking, he said, there are the preferred ways to get from one side of the festival to the other, because it's chaos to drive. The largest difference between what one may experience at Gateway Park and Overman Park is representative of this year's theme, quote, kids of all ages. The entertainment at Overman will be more family-oriented, and a person shouldn't expect to see adult beverages in hand. The festival is not just for beer drinkers. It's for kids who are 2 years old and those who are in their 90s, he said. And AARP, he notes, recently named the Sturgis Falls celebration the crown jewel of Cedar Falls back when the nonprofit added the city to its list of best places to live and retire now in November. His favorite part of the festival also happens to be at Overman Park, where the Marine Corps Band will perform for the 22nd year in a row. Quote, they love coming here because of the sound they're able to create, he said. I just feel very blessed to have them each year. It's very patriotic. No other festival gets them as often as we do, unquote. What happens in the parks trickles into downtown, Stoddard said. Sturgis Falls will generate these restaurants and stores' biggest sales for the entire year, he said. Festivities are scheduled from 11 a.m. until midnight Friday, 10 a.m. until midnight Saturday, and 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. on Sunday. In addition, the annual parade will begin downtown at 10 a.m. Saturday. Dignitaries will begin walking between 9:30 and 9:45 a.m. The children's parade is at 4:30 p.m. Friday. Marion's Midway Rides will open from 5 to 11 p.m. Thursday at Gateway Park. More information can be found online at sturgisfalls.org. For our next story, we have Cedar Basin Music Festival to showcase best talents it's ever had in 45-year history. Story filed by Andy Malone. And we see a brass band playing on a stage. It includes two trumpets and a trombone player. They're all men. Dateline Cedar Falls. Bob Seymour says the Cedar Basin Music Festival this weekend will be the biggest and best in its 45-year history. In fact, the board member noted the quality of music Friday, Saturday, and Sunday will be so far off the charts, the family-friendly, admission-free event will need three stages, significantly reducing the downtime in between each act. Now there's another picture that includes a soprano and a tenor saxophone and a trombone. Quote, "We put this together for the community and to give back," said Seymour. "And this will be by far the largest high-end festival that I've ever been involved with," unquote. About 14 bands will dot the lineup. That's on par with past years. But the headliners will include some bigger names. Clarksville native Maddie Poppy, season 16 winner of American Idol, and Heartache Tonight, an Eagles tribute band, will perform for 90 minutes at 6 p.m. and 3 hours at 8 p.m., respectively, Friday. Pork Tornadoes, a self-proclaimed powerful party band, will be there for 2 hours beginning at 10 p.m. on Saturday. All three will perform on the main stage at Sturgis Park, east of the Ice House Museum, near the corner of West 1st and Clay Streets. Seymour said fans will be able to interact with these bands and buy gear and merchandise from them when they're not on stage. Quote, "That's what's cool about having a small town festival like this one," he said. Seymour also pointed out that there will be bands people love and have come to expect at the Cedar Basin Music Festival back when it was merely a small town jazz festival. Saints All-Star Dixieland Band dates back as one of the event's originals and is scheduled to play 6-hour-long shows, a majority of which will be on the new Aldea Jazz Stage at 7511 University Avenue. Other familiar names, he noted, are Dry Run Creek and Katie and the Honky Tonks, who will perform on the festival's third stage, known as the Heritage Stage, also next to the Ice House. Quote, "Bring your lawn chairs and bring your kids and grandkids," said Seymour, who's been involved with organizing the festival since the early 1990s. Quote, "We get crowds that include 2-year-olds and 90-year-olds, unquote. In addition to all the music, there will be food and drink vendors. Seymour pointed out a couple of special events will be organized Sunday morning outside the Ice House at the park. The Cedar Falls Lions Club will hold a pancake breakfast from 8 a.m. until noon. Additionally, Prairie Lakes Church will lead 2 non-denominational services at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Seymour also said the board has a lot of sponsors to thank, but particularly New Aldea Livescapes, Bucket Corrugated Incorporated, Call Off Media, Martin Brothers, and Black Hawk Roof Company. Quote, "We couldn't do this without our sponsors," he said. "People can sign up to volunteer or donate and learn more about the festival online at cedarbasinmusic.org. And now we turn the page and find that we're in the regular Monday feature of the Courier, Northeast Iowa Area Escapades. Here are just a few of the events, shenanigans, and goings-on worth checking out this week in the Northeast Iowa area. On Wednesday, June 22nd, Storytime at Cedar Valley Arboretum. Author Jocelyn Green will read at Wednesday's Storytime at the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Garden, 1927 East Orange Road in Waterloo. The event begins at 10 a.m. in the Children's Garden. Free trolley rides will be offered following the story, weather permitting. It is free with regular garden admission, $7 for adults, 18 and older, and $4 for children ages 5 to 17. Children under 4 and members are free. Green is an award-winning author of nonfiction and fiction books, including the Windy City Saga series. We have several events to tell you about on Thursday, June 23rd. The first one runs through Sunday, June 26th. Three stages for Cedar Basin Music Festival. This year's Cedar Basin Music Festival will fill three stages at two locations, with entertainment beginning Thursday through Sunday. At the Ice House Museum location, there will be the main stage and heritage stage. At the New Aldaga location, the jazz stage will host performances. From 6:30 to 9 o'clock p.m. Thursday, musicians from the UNI Jazz Camp will present a concert on the jazz stage Thursday from 6:30 to 9 o'clock p.m. Among performers at various stages will be Maddie Popey, Saints All-Star Dixieland Band, St. Louis Stompers, Pork Tornadoes, Vic Vanderwall, Wave Cage, Katie and the Honky Tonks, Dry Run Creek, Petra Van Noose, Not Quite Brothers, Ephraim Zinth, Mike Conrad Trio, Stable Days, The Pelicans, Joshua Hackison Quartet, Simon Harding Quartet, Benny and Denny, David Schroederer, Bluestone Jazz Collective, and Heartache Tonight. Four times and stages, go to www.cedarbasinmusic.org. Also on Thursday, June 23rd, Pat Mitchell Golf Outing. Come cheer on golfers as they tee off for the 23rd annual Pat Mitchell Memorial Golf Outing. The event takes place Thursday, beginning at 11:45 a.m. at Pheasant Ridge Golf Course, 3205 West 12th Street in Cedar Falls. Also on Thursday is Waterloo Municipal Band to perform. At 7:30 p.m. Thursday, the Waterloo Municipal Band will perform. Concerts are at the River Loop Amphitheater, located near the Waterloo Center for the Arts, with the Cedar River as a backdrop. It's not unusual for pontoons and other boats to hover nearby to enjoy concerts. Down by the riverside is the theme for this summer's concert series. Next, beginning Friday, June 24th, and running through Sunday the 26th, Celebration is for kids of all ages. The 46th annual Sturgis Falls Celebration begins Friday and runs through Sunday in Cedar Falls. Carnival rides and games, plenty of live music, the Kids Way tent, arts and crafts fair, a parade, and much more are planned. Performances and music begin Friday in Overman Park with Perry Miller at 11 a.m. and continue throughout the weekend. Performers will also include the Sturgis Falls Celebration Children's Choir Friday at 5:15 p.m., followed by opening ceremonies. The Bill Riley Talent Search is from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Friday. Winners will appear on stage at 1 p.m. Saturday. The Marine Aircraft Wind Band Ensemble performs at 1:30 p.m. and at 7 p.m., and the 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing from Cherry Point, North Carolina, will command the Overman Park stage. The annual parade through downtown Cedar Falls begins Saturday at 10 a.m. The Gateway Park stage will host live music on Friday from 5 p.m. to midnight, Saturday from noon to midnight, and Sunday from 1 to 10 p.m. The Arts and Crafts Fair will feature more than 80 artisans from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. Kids Way stage performances take place throughout the weekend. The Cedar Falls Municipal Band will be on stage at Overman Park from 4 to 5 p.m. Sunday. For a complete listing of events, visit www.sturgisfalls.org. On Friday, June 24th, there's a puppet show to entertain kids. A puppet show is planned at 10:30 a.m., June 24th, at the Waterloo Public Library. The show is part of the Young Summer Library Program. Kids can attend for free. And now it's time to remind you that you are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Monday, June 20th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. And there is only one obituary in today's Courier. Madeline M. Ellensworth, age 84, died Wednesday, June 15th, 2022, at her home of natural causes. She was born on September 20th, 1937 in Waterloo, daughter of Agnes and Moses Lemons. She married Richard Ellensworth on May 1st of 1977. She is survived by three daughters and two sons, Madeline McCready of Waterloo, Hope Spouse Richard of Minnesota, Faith Marston of Cedar Falls, Stanley Lewis of Minnesota, and Matt Burke of Cedar Falls. Grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband and parents, brothers and sisters, and one grandson. Memorials will be directed to the family. Memorial service on June 26, 2022, at Waterloo Seventh Adventist Church, and burial at Waterloo Cemetery on June 27, 2022, at 12 o'clock p.m. Now we turn to the opinion section. This editorial was penned by John Cullen of the Storm Lake Times-Pilot, calming the inflation scare. Folks freaking out about inflation and rising interest rates apparently didn't live in 1980. In April 1980, inflation peaked at 15%, and unemployment was nearly 7%. Today, by comparison, inflation is running about 8%, and unemployment is at about 3.5% nationally. In Iowa, the unemployment rate is just 3%, down from 10.5% 2 years ago. In 1981, I had to buy a new car because a drunk driver hit mine and totaled it. Since the insurance didn't cover the full replacement cost, I had to borrow the balance from the bank. The loan rate was 22%. I was shocked and went back to the office and told the publisher of the Algona newspaper where I worked. He talked to the bank president, and because the newspaper was a good customer, the bank lowered my rate to only 18%. I took the loan, and because cars were cheaper then, and I was a bachelor, I was able to pay it off in about 6 months. Farmers weren't so fortunate in the 1980s. High interest rates put a lot of them out of business because they couldn't finance land and machinery at 22%. In 1985, after Mary and I got married, we bought our house here in Storm Lake. By then, loan rates had dropped. A 20-year mortgage rate was, quote, only 13%. Because Mary and I were first-time home buyers, we were able to get a mortgage backed by the state of Iowa for 10%, and we thought we had won the lottery. A few years later, rates dropped to 7%, and we refinanced our house, and that then bargain rate. Before we had kids, we accelerated our principal payments and were able to pay off the mortgage in less than 10 years. Here's how it worked. Our mortgage payment was about $386 per month. The first month, the principal was $53, and the interest was $333. In subsequent months, the principal increased slightly while the interest decreased. By the 12th month, the principal was still only $58, and the interest was $328. The monthly principal payment didn't exceed the interest payment until month 158. That's 13 years. So when we could afford it, we paid ahead on those smaller principal payments. It cut about 10 years off our mortgage and saved us many thousands of dollars in interest. In recent years, Following the real estate collapse of 2008, mortgage rates dropped to historic lows. In the past 5 years, you could finance a house for 2 to 3%. Automakers financed cars as low as 0%. Now people are freaking out because mortgage rates are 5.5% and car loan rates are 4.5% as of this writing. That's a far cry from 22%. The average interest rate in the U.S. over the past 60 years is 6.1%. So despite what the maniacs on cable TV are yelling at us, the financial sky is not falling. Yes, the stock market has dropped in recent weeks, but the Dow Jones average is still near a record high. It's over 30,000 today, but 2 years ago, it was below 23,000. No one likes to pay higher prices, but at least the unemployment rate is very low, unlike 40 years ago. Just about everyone who wants to work can find a job today, and wages have risen as the job market becomes more competitive for employers. As for inflation, today is nowhere nearly as bad as the 1960s and 70s. The economy was stimulated over the past year by the COVID government spending, which helped families survive after unemployment hit over 10% 2 years ago. When people started to spend that money, prices rose as businesses took advantage of the opportunity to raise profits in a hot economy. The problem is that everyone wants their income to inflate, but not their expenses. The economy just doesn't work that way. If big businesses see that you have money, they will convince you to spend it. There's one simple way to lower prices, especially gas. Quit spending so much. Instead of flying the family to Disney World for 2 weeks this summer, spend your vacation in the Black Hills or Okoboji or right here in Storm Lake. Go fishing with the kids in the lake or swim at Kings Point and have a picnic at Chautauqua Park. Just lay around the yard and drink lemonade. Maybe drive to Sioux City for an Explorers game or run down to Omaha and catch the College World Series. You still have fun with the kids without breaking the bank. You'll save a lot of money. You won't have the hassle of security checks at airports and probably have a lot more fun than fighting crowds at Disney World in Florida's sweltering summer heat. Plus, you'll help the local economy at the same time as you relax at home and watch prices fall. Inflation is the topic today. But if we start spending less on what we don't need, the problem will lessen by fall. In the meantime, if we look at history, we'll see that our financial situation is still pretty solid today, if we don't panic. John Cullen is the founder and retired publisher of the Storm Lake Times Pilot. This editorial was written by Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times Pilot. Already over the top, the chairman of the Iowa Republican Party this week called Representative Cindy Axne, quote, despicable. This just a week after the midterm primary election, it went a bit over the top. GOP Chairman Jeff Kaufman issued a press release to say that Axne was, quote, desperate and despicable for criticizing a state bill that would allow teenagers to work on amusement rides following a death from one. Despicable means worthy of hatred, someone to be despised. We don't really know Axne, Iowa's lone Democrat in Congress. She appears nice enough, certainly not despicable. She played hoops at West Des Moines Valley, went to the University of Iowa, worked for the state, started a small business with her husband, pretty much Iowa stuff. She also doesn't appear to be desperate. She is an incumbent who has not made waves in a competitive district. This is a seasonal squall in a climate of hyperbole. We should be aware of the superlatives of contempt. Other than antitrust enforcement in the livestock industry, we cannot think of many areas where we agree with Representative Randy Feenstra, a Republican who probably will be our congressman for the rest of our lives. He's not despicable. Governor Kim Reynolds has taken Iowa backwards by playing from a cynical national political playbook. We do not despise her or hate her. We do not have to hate our political adversaries. It's the language we've adopted. It gets worse as elections approach. The ads will be awful. The social media propaganda already boils. Tone it down. This is Iowa. We do not hate on people here, but we're sure talking like it. The next opinion piece is titled, A Berg is Unmoved on a Thursday by a congressional hearing. The Trump flag flies over this part of the country, no matter what the Thursday hearing into the January 6, 2021 insurrection portrayed. Placards for 2024 are in the windows of the tiny burgs on Buena Vista County blacktops. What do the six pickups in front of the town tap not know about that day or what led to it? And what do they care about Liz Cheney? Quote, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. The Wyoming representative and persona non grata in the GOP declared in her opening statement. Shaming appears to have lost its luster over time, and one has the feeling that the committee hearings to come will go as impeachment efforts did. Sure, Trump is a creep, but they all are. Where do you take it from there? Prosecutors in New York and Georgia may let Trump have his day in court for trying to subvert the democratic process. The committee is attempting a trial in the court of public opinion that, around here at least, is more concerned with fuel prices. Governor Kim Reynolds embraces Trump's endorsement. She had a decent day on Tuesday when four of her legislative candidates won primaries. She ran off Representative Dennis Bush, a Republican from Cleghorn, for having temerity to oppose her on private school voucher. That's Trump-style retribution to maintain discipline in taking a hard tack to the right. Guns. The Senate dithers. Parents grieve at the hearing tables. The senator from Texas says you can't let the perfect, say banning assault weapons and body armor, be the enemy of the good, watered-down red flag laws. Climate. When gasoline is near $5, you better drill, baby. We've had weather before. Do you remember 1936? The Proud Boys and Oath Keepers have been indicted. They're the ones who led the charge and spilled the blood, locals will say. And Trump just watched. They will use this as an excuse to take away your Second Amendment rights. The idea of banning assault rifles or limiting their ammo capacity is unthinkable in Northwest Iowa. You must have one for the coyotes. On that argument, controlling weapons that were designed for jungle war goes nowhere. Coyotes are everywhere. Climate change is a hoax. Gas prices are real. Immigrants get food stamps while I pay double for beef. Who needs Liz Cheney or some D.C. elite telling me about my responsibilities? She should pay my property taxes. When has she worked for a living? How many of our boys died in Iraq and Afghanistan for nothing at the hands of Dick Cheney? And what do we get for your Gulf Wars? Higher gas prices. And what does Joe Biden get us? John Deere tractors made in Mexico and a shooting war with Russia, which leads to higher natural gas prices. That's the vacuum of our politics in which the hearings on the insurrection and the whole Stop the Steal big lie swirl. Fox News didn't even bother to air the hearing. It was all so yesterday. It was terrible, yes. Those wackos should be in jail. Some already are. Good riddance. Trump wasn't there. He was watching on TV. He told them to stop, but they wouldn't. What was he supposed to do? So yeah, he could be elected president in Iowa if the election were held today. Like the impeachment trials, those who already knew the story and made up their minds long ago may have watched. It will make little difference to the prosecutors aiming for Trump or the jury of voters who felt his voice shared their animus toward government. Don't tell me what to do or think. Earn your own. Quit picking my pocket. This is all just the continuing witch hunt. What do you know about how I handle guns? Takes a lot of gall for you to lecture me on children when you're showing them dirty books in school. It was on the radio. You want me to think the sky is falling and it's my fault? I was not around in 1619. Take it someplace else. You can hear it in the quiet of a tiny village that Thursday afternoon, with just a post office and a bar and a sign of defiance in the window, and a gun store with a customer walking in. Have your hearings. A bulldozer is about to knock down what used to be Main Street. Now let's return to reading some local news in the Courier. Man sentenced on gun charges, waiting trial in nightclub shooting. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Waterloo. A former Waterloo man awaiting trial for a shooting outside a nightclub in 2021, has been sentenced to prison on weapons charges. Kalon Dion Bruce, 29, recently of Atlanta, Georgia, was sentenced to 2 years in prison on a charge of felon in possession of a firearm Friday in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. Under the sentence, Bruce will spend 3 years on supervised release following the prison time. The charge stems from a June 2, 2021 search of a home at 308 Cortland Street, where police found a .45-caliber Springfield XD pistol with a laser sight. Bruce is scheduled to go on trial in July on charges of intimidation with a weapon and willful injury for allegedly firing a gun outside Club Legacy, 120 Sumner Street. On March 21, 2021, the shooting left Oliver Washington with a gunshot wound to the leg, and it came after Bruce's had been involved in an altercation with Washington, according to court records. Next, we have Youth Art Team Community Partners Dedicate 4th Street Bridge Mural, Dateline Waterloo. Youth Art Team will celebrate the completion of its most recent mural project, consisting of 68 painted panels lining Waterloo's 4th Street Pedestrian Bridge on Tuesday. Tours of the mural will be given by youth artists from 5 to 6 p.m. A brief public dedication will occur at the bridge at 6 p.m., followed by a celebration at Youth Art Team headquarters from 6 to 7 p.m. While the bridge is closed for the Cedar River Lighting Project, it will be open for this special event. Youth Art Team's lead team of 25 artists, together with an additional 55 artists aged 5 to 18, contributed over 1,500 hours to complete the project, which began in 2017, after a postponement in 2020 due to the pandemic. The team completed the panels together during the fall of 2021. Youth Art Team summer camp artists and summer camp students from Kingsley and Lowell Elementary Schools in Waterloo also participated. Quote, "It was pretty exciting to be part of a big project that a lot of people in Waterloo and Cedar Falls can see for a long time. I can take my sister from Tennessee to show her when she visits," said Sophie Matlock, a Youth Art Team lead artist. The mural consists of 1,250 feet of painted panels, all designed by Youth Art Team artists. Youth Art Team artists began the project by discussing the symbolism of the 4th Street Bridge and how it connects both sides of Waterloo. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart shared his excitement for the project in a video created for the artists, saying, "The mural is going to be able to tell a story about how your creativity is important. Your voice, your artistic expression, are important to the city of Waterloo," unquote. After the dedication, guests will be guided to Youth Art Team headquarters at 325 East Park Avenue for food, games, and fun. Photographs and artifacts from the creation of the mural will be on display. 7 Youth Art Team artists who recently graduated from high school in Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and Rhinebeck will also be celebrated. Some started with Youth Art Team when they were 5 years old and have continued to be active in Youth Art Team projects and collaborations. As part of the event, Youth Art Team staff will recognize community partners and the 50-plus volunteers that supported the artists and served as mentors, including 15 local artists. For more information, contact Heidi Fuchman at area code 319-343-8029. And now we turn to the national news page. House panel may subpoena Pence. Committee also waiting to hear from Justice Thomas's wife. Story filed by Hope Yen of the Associated Press. Dateline, Washington. Members of the House committee investigating the Capitol riot said Sunday they may subpoena former Vice President Mike Pence and are waiting to hear from Virginia Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, about her role in the illegal plot to overturn the 2020 election. Lawmakers indicated they will release more evidence about Donald Trump's alleged effort to defraud supporters by fundraising off false claims of a stolen presidential election. They also pledged to provide pertinent material to the Justice Department by the end of the month for its criminal investigation. The department complained in a letter last week that the committee was complicating its investigation by not sharing transcripts from its 1,000 interviews. Quote, "We're not taking anything off the table in terms of witnesses who have not yet testified," said Representative Adam Schiff, who described a Pence subpoena as, quote, "certainly a possibility." Quote, "We would still, I think, like to have several high-profile people come before our committee," said Schiff, a Democrat from California. For example, the committee has been able to document most of Trump's end of his call to Pence on the morning of the insurrection on January 6, 2021, when the then-president made his final plea for Pence to stop the certification of Joe Biden's victory when Pence presided over the Electoral College count in Congress. Members have not yet documented directly what Pence said in response. The committee chairman, Representative Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, recently said the committee was still engaging with Pence's lawyers, while also suggesting it may not be necessary for him to appear because of testimony from many of Pence's closest aides. Committee members also hope to learn more about Ginni Thomas's own effort to keep Trump in office and the potential conflicts of interest posed on her husband as a result of January 6 cases that come before the Supreme Court. Republican State Representative Rusty Bowers, the Arizona House Speaker, is scheduled to testify at the committee's hearing Tuesday, focusing on state officials who were contacted by Trump and the White House as Trump tried to overturn the results. Bowers is likely to be asked about emails he received from Thomas, urging him and other state officials to set aside Biden's 2020 win and choose their own set of electors. Quote, "We have questions for her, and we may have questions for him as well," said Representative Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California. Thomas has publicly indicated that she can't wait to appear before the committee after receiving their request by letter last week. Along with emailing Arizona officials, Thomas, who attended a rally Trump held just before the Capitol riot, also had written to then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in the weeks after the election, encouraging him to work to overturn Biden's victory. Quote, "I think the committee will be interested in, among other things, whether this was discussed with Justice Thomas, given that he was ruling on cases impacting whether we would get some of this information," Schiff said. This past January, Thomas was the lone member of the court who supported a bid by Trump to withhold documents from the January 6 committee. Next, gas tax holiday worth considering, Yellen says. Dateline, Rehoboth, Delaware. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said Sunday that she expects the U.S. economy to slow in the months ahead, but that a recession is not inevitable. Yellen offered a dose of optimism, even as economists grow increasingly worried about a recession fueled by skyrocketing inflation and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. She also expressed an openness during an interview on ABC's This Week to a federal gas tax holiday to help give motorists some relief at the pump. Several lawmakers have floated the idea as the average price of gasoline hovers around $5 per gallon. The tax is 18.4 cents per gallon. Quote, "That's an idea that's certainly worth considering," Yellen said, when asked if the administration is weighing it. She added that President Joe Biden wants to do anything he possibly can to help consumers, unquote. And Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm said, quote, "It's one of the tools," but told CNN's State of the Union that part of the challenge with the gas tax, of course, is that it funds the roads, unquote. Yellen said overall consumer spending in the United States remains strong, while noting that spending patterns are changing given the impact of rising food and energy prices. Yellen said household savings during the coronavirus pandemic will help sustain spending. Quote, "I expect the economy to slow," Yellen said. "It's been growing at a very rapid rate, and the economy has recovered, and we have achieved full employment. We expect a transition to steady and stable growth, but I don't think a recession is at all inevitable." Yellen echoed Biden's optimism in the face of economic headwinds. Biden, in an interview with the Associated Press last week, insisted that a recession is not inevitable and made the case that U.S. is in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome this inflation. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Monday, June 20th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.